the hour of 9 o'clock, and Gavin Steinhobel is in the house. Lovely to see you again, Gavin.
It's a relief to be in the house, walking up through lifestyle in this heat.
Wow!
And your aircon's working wonderfully, and I'm feeling a lot better about life.
Well, you see, there's always an upside, hey? Despite rumors to the contrary.
Yes.
And I see you've been very actively supporting Donald Trump on the social media platforms. I think you'll appreciate that a lot.
Yeah. Well, I just, there were 4 years of like nonsensical policies from, you know, obviously the bastion of the free world, and that's the States. And it was just so sad to see, you know, all these end of squabbles about gender and ideology. And, you know, ideology captures, it's a bit of a virus, it's a parasitic thing, and people get captured by ideology and they lose their common sense. And, you know, I've just watched everything that Trump's done. I mean, his first guest was Netanyahu, his first foreign dignitary that visited now. And, you know, he's said a few things. You know, one is they're withdrawing from the United Nations Human Rights Commission because it's anti-Semitic. It's always targeting Israel. It's done, it's got way more resolutions against Israel than all the other countries combined. And, you know, there are some bad players in the world that should have been censured that weren't. So, firstly, and then secondly, obviously the UN aid group, because it's obviously been exposed that they were actually also financing and supplying Hamas. So, you know, he's just basically pulled the rug out under that whole game. You know, he did deserve the Nobel Prize for the Abraham Accords, where Arab countries started to recognize Israel's right to exist, because that is the fundamental underlying thing that that needs to happen for there to be peace in the Middle East. Is if they can be good neighbors, they don't have to love each other or even like each other, but you have to be good neighbors if you want a peaceful neighborhood. And so he's moving at resurrecting all of that. I think Arab nations are also sick and tired of the Iranians and their proxies creating unrest and instability. I mean, however you want to look at it, October 7th was a complete outrage. And so I think things are changing. It appears he's not going to want Gaza to be resettled.
Well, his latest they're calling it a bombshell in the sense that the room exploded with questions when
yes.
he announced that his idea of sorting out the problem in Gaza was to literally flatten it and redevelop it and move all the Palestinians out and into neighboring countries.
Well, Jordan, for instance, was meant to be Palestine, and, you know, it's under a royal family that's a bit besieged at the moment. But, you know, there are connections there. And so, what I like about him is he just takes a completely different view of things and goes, well, you know, there's the answer to the problem. I mean, he's been concerned about the borders of his own country, which any self-respecting country should be. I mean, you can't, if you don't have borders, you don't have a country. You know, to put the Mexicans and the Canadians on terms that they'll be tariffed at 25%, and you know, they came out shaking their fists and muttering, much like the ANC have lately, and then they saw the sense of it, and they've all committed troops to the borders and to make sure that the borders between Mexico and the US and Canada and the US are not porous. And so, because people always forget, they think, oh well, you know, you always the left always takes this view, like, well, you know, these people are coming for a better life. Well, the truth of the matter is most of the people that are coming across are hardened criminals. They're smuggling drugs. They arrive in whichever country they're going to, they're undocumented, so they don't work in the formal economy. They work in the shady underground economy. People also don't acknowledge the fact that a lot of people get trafficked when borders are open, and they get sold into sexual slavery in these countries. So, you know, there's a very good reason that you have borders.
Well, absolutely. But I just want to ask you, in terms of that sweeping statement, that most of them are criminals and drug dealers and traffickers, etc., etc.
Well,
it seems like there's quite a lot of people that pop across borders just to find work.
Yes, there is that. There are the seasonal workers, but they can get, you know, those are people that would qualify to come in through the normal process, and that's where the problem is. That the people who wouldn't qualify for visas, working visas, student visas, or even just residence visas, are the very self-same people who have to come through the borders illegally. And why don't they qualify? Well, they have criminal records, or they, you know, they've got nefarious ends. And so they don't have work, or they don't have a place at a university, or they don't have prospects or family. And so you know, they're coming into the country that way because they can't come in ordinarily. So it is just a fact, and they've caught many people at these borders that are criminals, convicted criminals in their own countries, and are being looked for by Interpol and so forth. So it isn't all rosy, and it isn't just people who are down and out, but it's people who are opportunistic and people who their own countries don't want. Now, all of those countries have started taking them back.
Countries like Venezuela, for example, where he's threatened to repatriate something like 360,000 people from America. Apparently, if they go back to Venezuela, they will be targeted by a very repressive regime because they left, and so on and so forth. I'm not going to go there because we don't really have the facts.
We don't have to. You know,
I wanted to ask you this. South Africa, because I've seen huge amounts of South African joy at the fact that Donald Trump and Elon Musk have had a go at President Ramaphosa, and I have no personal contact with either of them, so I don't know if it's true, but there seems to be some evidence to suggest that this is the case. And there's been a bit of setting the record straight, it would appear, from the presidency, trying to explain that, in fact, their expropriation without compensation bill, in fact, is rooted in democratic principle and law, etc., etc., etc.
Yes, which is complete rubbish. Oh. I mean, complete rubbish. And I was so disappointed to hear Steenhuisen trying to paper over the cracks just to keep the peace, because, you know, that to me, he's letting down the side in a big way. There are two big issues that South Africa is doing that is not internationally acceptable by first world countries, and the one is the BEE policy. Now, Trump has in his own country said people will be hired on their merit only, with no regard to the color of their skin or their background, or, you know, if you can do the job best, you get the job. All right. Now, he mentioned in the speech, and I picked up on it, he mentioned that their Supreme Court had the year before made a very important judgment in that respect. And we did discuss it on air, and that was that Asian Students for Fair Admission against Harvard case went to the Supreme Court of Appeal in America. Judge Carith Thomas, who by coincidence is a black judge, was part of the group of judges that decided that affirmative action in admissions is completely against their constitution. And his reason for saying so is, one, it doesn't seem to have any defined goals or any sunset clause. So there will never be a time where people can sit down and go, well, you know, we've got this affirmative action. When we reach this, it'll be over, or after so many years, then that's it. And, you know, we got the same with BEE. There's no sunset clause. There's no, well, when is there redress? I mean, I look at, for example, my son, who's just gone to university, and he didn't get his first choice because, you know, there's a quota system, and he's a white kid. Now, he's a white kid who was born in 2006, you know, 12 years after apartheid. Nobody in my family, nobody in my wife's family ever served in the apartheid government or were ever employees of the state or ever enforced the laws of apartheid. And here you've got this kid who's a minority group in this country, and still, you know, he's being prejudiced by the color of his skin. And so, or by virtue of the color of his skin. And you know, that to me, I mean, anybody would know that that is unjust, okay? The second thing Clarence Thomas said is that there's no evidence whatsoever that taking somebody who ordinarily wouldn't have the SAT scores to be in the top in the top universities, the Ivy League universities, and putting them there as being essentially the least competent person in class does them any good. You know, do they really get degrees? No, well, some do, but very many fall out because they shouldn't be at that university because they've got in there not on their merit, okay?
A bit like the sporting
side. A bit like the sport. And yeah. So, I mean, ultimately, you know, BEE is a big thing, and where it's really stuck, it's, you know, been a sticking point is, you know, South Africans pay unusually and exorbitantly high data costs. I mean, I was in Europe in December, January now, And the data was really, really cheap. And, you know, so relative to what we pay here. And, you know, Elon Musk has the Starlink system. And ultimately, I think on the 27th, they did a rollout where it's going directly to cell phones. So you can take your cell phone, go anywhere in the world, and you're covered by his Starlink app. But also the data costs are way lower, which is hugely beneficial to South Africans. And it's super, super convenient for far-flung areas as well. Like, you know, if you're in Nutu or, you know, if you're in the middle of nowhere, if you're on a farm, you can get this Starlink directly to your cell phone soon. And so the problem is that Starlink can't get an ICASA license because they're not, you know, 30% black owned. And so they can't get a license to operate in this country. Everybody's being prejudiced by it. There's no benefit to the BEE requirement other than perhaps you'll put some cadre in there who'll now have a 30% interest for nothing. And basically live a parasitic existence of a company that's done a great job. And Elon Musk quite correctly said, "No, I won't play that game." So, you know, Donald Trump's aware of that.
But do you think that he really cares about South Africa and South Africans that are prejudiced against? Do you think it's just a political?
He doesn't have to position? Care. The point is that, you know, it's a market that he wants to enter into. And the barriers to entry are racist and unfair.
A different question. Do you think that it's going to make any difference to the outcome of deliberations at South African government level at all? And I ask the question because it would appear that
I can tell you that it won't.
Okay.
I can tell you that it won't because historically for 30 years, the ANC government has always put its ideology before the interests of its citizens. And so it's in the interest of the citizens that we get Starlink. It's all over Africa already. We're one of the few that don't have it. And that doesn't matter to the ANC because they want to make the ideological point. And they can't afford to go backwards on BEE because, you know, people vote for the party that says, listen, I'm going to give you an advantage over other citizens of other races.
Yeah. And so if this is the case then, and Donald Trump's position is quite intransigent. We're cutting off all support, all aid, all money flowing, etc. So Gwede Mantashe says, well, then we won't give them mineral. I mean, okay.
Yeah, that is so childish. I mean, we just don't seem to have a functional foreign foreign office, really, do we?
Where do you think this is going to lead? Is it going to cause us harm in terms of economic harm? I'm talking about the average South African. Or is it going to steer us in a new course?
Well, what we need to do, obviously, is just have some sort of, you know, calm for starters. You know, you don't have to simply be retaliatory. You saw what happened to bigger countries and economies than ours, the Canadians in particular. They capitulated because they understood that, you know, I mean, people always go, well, the US is no longer our biggest trading partner. Well, that's fine. But it's our next biggest trading partner, and that's a big chunk of our trade. So the second thing is, you know, obviously people are disinvesting. And I mean, direct foreign investment is critical to growing our economy. And you never, ever, ever hear the ANC talk about growing the economy. You know, they can only do what Winston Churchill said, you know, stand in the bucket and try and lift themselves by the handle. it's you know, the point is that all of these decisions, you know, pushing through an expropriation without compensation bill, all of those things are body blows to our economy. Now, you can't come and tell me you're fighting poverty if you don't even understand the very basic notion that poverty can only be alleviated by a growing economy. And if the economy doesn't grow faster than the number of people that require jobs, you will have poverty. And it's a very simple 1 + 1 = 2, okay? They don't get it. All they're worried about is, well, we got to make sure that, you know, we take from these people and give to those people. It's a typical leftist attitude. The left always wants to tell you how they're going to spread the fruits of the economy. You get this, that'll be fair, this will be fair. But they never, ever show any interest in creating those fruits. They think there's a horn of plenty where goods and services just flow out of. And the one thing is the government doesn't and isn't, shouldn't be a player in the economy. It should liberalize the economy so that we can get money in. We can assure foreigners that when they spend money and invest money in this country, the state won't take those assets and not compensate them for them. Won't confiscate those assets. We need to show them that we have sound policies, that we don't flim-flam and turn around every 5 minutes, that when you come to this country, you know what it's going to look like in 10 years' time. You know, those are the sort of things. Now, the ANC's run out of options because after 30 years, they've alleviated nothing. In fact, they've made a lot of things worse. In particular, every single SOE and almost all everything's dysfunctional at the moment. I mean, we just saw our power off for a large chunk of December, and it's ongoing. So, you know, the point of the matter is, when you have no results, you have to fall back on grand ideological gestures and say, well, you know, we are going to take and not compensate, and we are going to have a health bill that, because we failed to maintain our provincial hospitals and to give people a decent, citizens a decent option to go to a state hospital that's functional, clean, and where you probably won't die, we have to now take private funds and private hospitals and bring them in because, you know, we couldn't do it. So
I gather you're not a fan of
I'm not a fan of the fact that the ideology, there's an ideological war in this country. There's a path that to me is a clear path to resolving our problems and putting our past behind us. It has to be non-racial and it has to be free market. Okay. Now, one of the principles of free market is private property, and they're attacking that, you know. So they've got a communist idea where basically there will be enough for everybody magically. We all know that it won't trickle down because nothing that this government does trickles down to the people because it gets stolen along the way. And so, you know, the point of the matter is if we don't liberalize and we do sound economic principles, we have a free market.
But, you know, Gavin, we've been talking about this forever, and most, shall we say, business-oriented or economic growth-oriented industrial capitalist, etc., are in agreement and in accord. I don't think that anyone can argue with those facts. They are the fact. But the problem is, the reality is, that the one can talk until the cows come home. I think what is required now, particularly with regard to the local economy and the local service delivery or lack thereof, I'm definitely tired of all the sort of letter writing and words coming from organizations that we are going to fix it.
I know.
Is there not going to come a tipping point? I listened to Rob Herzog saying, well, you know, absolutely. Our tipping point is near. There is going to be a time in which most that have resources and something to fight for and the ability to fight for are going to say, enough is enough. Let us now do X or Y or Z. And it seems as if municipalities that are completely dysfunctional around South Africa, and there are several, are now being taken over by businesses or civic organizations and being fixed from the inside. But, you know, do you think this is going to be our salvation, or do you believe?
Well, I think what's happened is, I mean, I don't want to point any fingers, but you know what happens to these civic society groups and organizations is they cozy up to the municipality. They get some things done, other things not, and you know, ultimately, I can just feel. Like in KDM municipality, I just feel like, you know, this, we send all these rates every month and we get very little in return. You know, I was out driving down that Salt Rock Main Road, and I mean, there's some potholes there that are, you know, that have been there for years now. You know, you look at the bridge there by Sharker's Head that washed, or the road that washed away. You know, that's been there from the first floods. You know, it hasn't been repaired. You know, there's I'm just saying.
Are you in support of, there's a move afoot at the moment to withhold payment and go into or enter into a dispute? There is a circular letter in which you can fill in and send to the municipality indicating that you are now in dispute and are going to withhold while this dispute goes on. You can't be with your services can't be withdrawn or cut off because of the dispute that needs to be resolved. You're not saying you're not going to pay, you're just holding back.
Well, I think what's happened is, you know, a lot of people, and especially corporates, you know, they've kind of played along because they, you know, they need to, you know, they've got big businesses and they just want to play along with all of this. And, you know, they might make a press statement or two, but there's no real action. And I think ultimately, yes, as ratepayers, we probably should get together and say, look, you know what, let's pool our rates, fix what needs to be fixed and give them the change, you know. I'm not sure what the mechanisms are for that. I know it was done in, for example, Paris. But there they waited until the municipality was completely dysfunctional. Now, we can't wait like that. You know, I was listening. I was on Sunday. I was sitting in my house, and I could hear you know, car racing going on the public roads. I mean, not a sign of KDM's traffic department. You know, and so it just seems like nothing. Yeah. Our money goes to Stanga, and we get nothing for it. And I think that has to end. I've always said, you know, we should have our own municipality because Belita's full of progressive and capable people. You know, we shouldn't be dictated to from Stanga.
Well, I will be right behind you if you lead the charge. How about that? That's always the thing. And we have, you know, luckily we are able still to talk about these things because apparently that's
a free country
another
still.
One of our rights that's under attack, according to some of the sages that I've been listening to. So we need to.
That's maybe the final point I'd like to make. You know, Stianazen was saying, well, this new act is, you know, still has to comply with the constitution, and they haven't changed the constitution. There was an attempt to change the constitution and have expropriation without compensation, but it has a clause in it which undermines that, you know, and that's how it starts. And, you know, as Cyril, I can't remember the book where the author quoted Cyril as saying what he's going to do to white people is just boil them slowly like a frog in a pot. Yeah. And you know, it's when you allow little moves like that to happen unchallenged that the temperature goes up. And the temperature is going up for us very much.
Well, the one prediction that I've heard is that there is going to be, come the next elections or possibly thereafter, a new political amalgamation of those that are more centre-right thinking in terms of economic growth, safety, security, clean, green, etc., etc. There's an amalgamation of like minds that is coming. I'm cautiously optimistic that that is true. It will be a new formation, possibly an amalgamation, not the government of national unity as we know it. But this seems to be the way forward. The way backwards possibly is to go the MKEFF route.
Well, that's the sort of Damocles that's always hanging there, and probably why the DA and PA and them haven't been as vociferous as they should be about the signing off of this bill without consulting them. Is because if they walk out of this GNU, the ANC's alternative will obviously be to cozy up to MK. Whether they will or can, or whether those bridges haven't been burned, I don't know. I'm not a political sage. But I suppose that little sword of Damocles hanging like it does sort of make the opposition parties hang in there long after they should have.
Mm. And there's a good point to pause, and we will reconvene in a week's time if we're still here. If we're still here. If we haven't been boiled
to
death.
You know, the one thing is that we've got, it was Albert Camus that wrote that even in the depths of winter, I found within me an eternal summer. And I think that is one thing, is the South African spirit and the spirit of our people is indomitable. It might take time, but the forces of evil will not succeed. You know, the only reason that we went to the ICC and charged Israel in that is because, you know, we were Iranian proxies. You know, when the ANC was insolvent before the last election and suddenly they came out and they had money to campaign, the money came from Iran. You know, so there's favors that were done, and there's loyalty that's owed, and it's quite obvious it's playing out that way. It's not a big ideological thing with the ANC. It's purely that they took the money and now they have to do the bidding.
Well, fascinating to engage on these things, and always very heated and very, shall we say, thought-provoking. Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., my special guest on a Wednesday. We look forward to reconnecting next Wednesday, Gavin.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for a good attorney down in the Belito Village, you'll find Kloppers Inc. And knock on the door. Gavin will be there waiting for you. The morning show continues.